What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
As we gear up for Chad's trial this year, currently it's scheduled to start this April 2024, we will be sharing all of our interviews to make sure our hidden gems are fully caught up on this case. This interview for this episode was originally recorded in April 2022, but it has never been shared on our podcast until now. Chad Daybell's former neighbor breaks her silence. The crimes that happened in her quiet Idaho town still haunt her years later, along with the secrets she says are permeating through Madison and Fremont County. Bernadine tells Hidden True Crime what she saw and why she believes Chad Daybell has more victims. She discusses the suspicious death of neighbor Eldon Clausen and the concerns many share about his unexpected death just days after JJ Vallow was buried in Chad's yard.
Hidden, a true crime podcast. A forensic psychologist and a journalist explore the hidden motives behind unthinkable crimes while examining our deepest fears along the way. I am with Bernadine. Bernadine was Chad and Tammy Daybell's neighbor. And you no longer live in Rexburg, but you have a lot of thoughts and a lot of experience about that neighborhood, these beliefs. Why don't you share a little bit about who you are and how you're processing everything? And then okay. We'll dig in.
Thanks, Lauren, for having me. You know, I lived where Chad's brother lives now. So I lived right next door to Eldon. And at that time, somebody else lived
Eldon
in the
Clausen,
home.
Eldon Clausen, Chad's neighbor who passed away. Okay.
Yeah. And Chad and them hadn't moved there yet. Then I moved away and I moved back and I lived on the same street as Chad. Mm. And so then my kids went to school with Chad's and Tammy's kids. Okay.
Wow.
So I had seen Chad at school events. We never had a conversation. I'd seen Tammy at the library, you know, hi, kind of knew each, would recognize each other. But my big connection was with my kids and their kids. Okay.
So you knew their kids well.
I knew the youngest one, Mark, very well. He served his mission in South Africa, but my kids were good friends with their kids. They did drama together. My kids would go over there for bonfires. My third youngest and Leah, their daughter, were mates together with, I think it was speech and debate. That they, you know, they were paired up.
Classmates, yeah, partners.
Yeah. And so, but my youngest, he's on a mission now in your area. He was actually just transferred yesterday back to Warm Springs in Henderson.
I was always looking for him, but yeah, I never met him.
So,
yeah.
That's okay. So he and I were talking about this a few weeks ago, and he said, or a few months ago, and he said the sickest part for him is that he sat at that fire pit.
The bonfire pit.
The kids, you know, and he says, you know, obviously that was pre, I believe, anything happening, but it just made him sick, you know? And so as far as me, how am I doing that now with all of us? You know, we're in the truck. We drive, you know, 11 hours a day. So a lot of
YouTube, you're at work right now, taking a break.
Yeah.
Saying, hey, was this a good time, Lauren? So I jumped on. Yes.
And so we get to listen to a lot of this, you know, and my interest with it has been, I was baptized when I was 9 years old. Okay.
And where are you from originally?
I'm originally from Rhodesia, which is now Zimbabwe.
Okay.
And it kind of went through a Ukraine experience a little, you know, the bombing, the Russians came in, did whatever. And we fled one night to South Africa. We lived on a beach. We were able to get an apartment. And the man that gave us the free apartment was Mormon. And so 3 weeks later, we were baptized into the church, and it changed our lives very dramatically, very, very dramatically. So for me as a little kid, it was a lifeline away from my dad's drinking, all the garbage that was going on in our lives. It became a lifeline for us, you know, for me as a kid.
And you're in South Africa at this point.
Yeah. And then I moved over here when I was 18 and went to Ricks College.
Oh.
And then went to BYU. And so a lot of
those wondering, Ricks College is now BYU Idaho. They switched the name. So you went to Rexburg to school at
right.
Rick. Okay.
Yeah. And so I've lived up there mostly. And then I was in Utah for 10 years and then back up to Idaho again. And that time I lived in Rexburg mostly.
Okay, that was a helpful explanation. So going back to what you were saying, though, your LDS, you were talking to your son who is now on a mission and how it's so hard for him. And then you said you were about to say the hardest thing for you before I interrupted to get your background a bit or what you've been processing on the road. As you say, you travel for work.
The Mormon Kool-Aid, the LDS Kool-Aid, and there is the Chad Daybell, Julie Rowe Kool-Aid, okay? Mm-hmm. And I feel like when the two came together, it was like perfect ingredients to create this horrible bomb, you know? Mm-hmm. Now, coming from Rhodesia and being on food rations and terrible things, war trauma in Rhodesia, okay? I am a natural. One of the things that I liked about the LDS Church was plan for disasters in your life, whether it be a political disaster or not having a job or whatever. So I've always been very self-sufficient. Even now, I have 9 children and a lot of grandchildren. And so I'm always making sure, okay, if they don't have, I want to make sure that I have for them so that we're all safe, because I know what it's like to suddenly not have. Okay, and be dependent on whoever and not be able to get by.
Yeah.
And so that part of the church attracted me a lot because there wasn't anybody else. I was Methodist before, by the way, who really talked about that.
That makes
sense. Yeah, but I also, my mom got into the Julie Rowe stuff. Sorry, noisy trucks. My mom got into the Julie Rowe stuff and she brought me the books that I read probably the first maybe 4 or 5 pages. And I was just like, man, I'm sorry. There's something wrong with this person. You know, like that was my, but at the same time, as I've listened to everything that you have and the other YouTubers have talked about Julie Rowe, there's things I recognize. And the same thing with Lori Daybell, Vallow, whatever her name is, you know, the end of time stuff, the stuff we taught, there's a second coming, there's all these catastrophes and things coming. You know, there's a lot of these things that you recognize and go, okay, if you go too much of this and too much of that, you're creating this a monster, you know. And that's what I see that they happen. And I just got the Julie Rowe book, her biography, and I read that. And when I was reading through her book, some of the things that were really intriguing to me were similarities between, because she was an army brat. Okay, so a lot of traveling, a lot of whatever. I was also...
And you read this really quickly. You read this recently, everyone, because what I love about Bernadine is just how curious she is, and this crime in with people you knew and the religion you know has been something you've been really processing things with and trying to understand. So I just wanted to explain why you're reading her book. So go ahead.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Because I'm somebody who always has to try and understand. Now, why would somebody really do that? Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't understand why somebody would think that way. And then I have to try and understand. And the thing when I was reading her book, and Lauren, if you haven't read it, I'll mail mine to you.
Thank you. You know what? We had it because I did read part of it. And so I'm now searching for it because I realized I have a bigger interest in finishing it now. But if I can't find it, I'll let you know. So thank you.
Okay.
Then we don't buy another.
Yeah, I know. I know. When I was buying it online, I'm like, oh, okay, I'm just going to do it. You know, there's things that I believe that when she talks about, she hints at sexual abuse as a child.
Okay.
And I feel like there are things that come with that that allow you to kind of measure the temperature in a room, if you want to speak. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I feel like for some people, it's more than other people. And she calls herself a clairvoyant. I feel like whatever happened to her as a kid that she got into her head so much, the voices that she hears, she calls them constant, right? And I look at the LDS side of it, and we talk about being led by the spirit, right? And then you combine those two things, and it's the spirit's telling me to do everything. Well, one of the things we know is to check in, okay, are we being told to do something right or something wrong? You know, instead of interpret everything as right. You know, right. And so, you know, going through her book and hearing these parallels. Okay, I understand this as a child. This happened to me. I tried to read the book from a place of compassion rather than just coming right off and going, okay, this chick's nutsoid, like I did with the first.
You're trying to stand back. I do the same thing. I try to stand back and really listen to understand. Right.
Yeah.
Try to get rid of as much bias as I can before delving into something. Right.
Right. Right. But having lived in Rexburg and there's so much secrecy in Rexburg. There's some things would happen. A girl would be raped at school and at college, and nobody would hear about it. Okay. And it combine it with the sort of thing like the culture, I don't want to call it a conspiracy culture, but this somebody's going to come after our food storage. Somebody's going to come after our I don't want to say anti-government because that's not exactly how they are in Rexburg, but a suspicion. Okay. I feel like it's a perfect breeding ground for what happened with them.
Okay. But to clarify Rexburg, because it is interesting to hear this take. I'm really interested in this. Would you call it maybe like an us versus them mentality too, a little bit, when you say they're suspicious and think other people are going to do something?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I think that there's a lot of that, you know, and I understand there's different groups and so on. And I never got involved with the whole Julie Rowe. You know, I know that there were groups like they had I was actually running the museum in Rexburg beneath the tabernacle where they had their meeting upstairs.
That one big meeting,
Right. And that's why I've said, I know that building doesn't seat more than 900 people. But I didn't go to that, you know, But I knew people that went to it, you know. My mom got involved with Emotion Code. And this is one of the things I wanted to talk about because So in 2010, I hurt my back, could not get it fixed. And I met a man who did energy healing. And he was a theta healer. Okay. And theta healers, the Vianna Steibel is the lady that started that, wrote the books.
What's her name again?
Vianna, V-I-A-N-N-A-S-T-I-B-A-L. She started this theta healing group, and she was LDS and she'd left the church. And what it is the mind-body connection. So whatever, say for instance, I get a kidney infection, okay, and you go into beliefs and you have a kidney infection because you're, excuse the word, ticked off, but use a different word than somebody else, right? So if you resolve your issues, the kidney infection will go away. That's pretty much a very very basic summary. I took all her classes and I became a teacher for theta healing. Okay. Yeah, I was fascinated with this. It made sense to me. I'm a very much a nature person, you know, herbalist. And so my degree was in ethnobotany. So the whole natural side of things just really appealed to me. Okay. But I noticed a lot, and I actually stopped being involved with theta healing a few years later because people started getting really weird. And I just couldn't stand it. It was a very egotistical environment. Like, I healed this person. I healed that person, kind of a mentality, and I didn't like it. Okay? I felt like anything that that there, you know, scientifically, I could see, okay, you could meditate yourself into a brainwave that would, which is theta, right, that you could do yourself good. But when you decided that you could heal other people, that you were crossing a line. Okay. And then, of course, I was also married to a doctor. So I had, and he was, like you said, a narcissist, not a good person.
We've moved on from him.
And so I could also understand, reading Julie's books, okay, the attraction to the energy healing stuff. Okay. But along with this energy healing stuff was a lot of, and I don't know, like, my mom gave me the emotion code book, but I never read it. And, but it sounded like there was some similarities to the theta healing stuff. And at the time I warned my mom, said, you don't want to get involved with this. You know, this is going down. And this pathway that there was a lot of assumption, I thought, of information. Like, okay, we know that the Middle Eastern people believe in, the past life stuff. They have a different word for it. Reincarnation. Yeah. But in theta healing as well, they talked about having lived before. Okay. Having had these past lives, that if you had a feeling about something, perhaps you were, maybe you like Indian food, so maybe you lived in India in a past life. Or, and I had a real hard time with that. Okay.
Yeah, so was this in emotion code? Is this taught by Vianna?
This is in theta healing. This is taught by Vianna. Yeah. Right. Okay. Right. Mm-hmm. And so for me, that didn't jive. It didn't make sense. Okay. Now, when I was reading Julie Rowe's book, she talks about, like, being a child and going into a building and enjoying, or reading a book and enjoying the stories of Joan of Arc, for instance. Okay. Then later, when she gets involved in motion code, she comes out and says it or intimates that she was Joan of Arc.
She has said that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And so you see this kind of metamorphosis of thinking based on these other life experiences. And that's why I'm saying I could understand, looking at my path, how I could have chosen that path and said this, you know. Part of the emotion code and theta healing is that you can meditate to be able to see the future. You can access what they call the Akashic Records, A-K-A-S-H-I-K, Akashic Records, and see what's going to happen. Okay? And so, you know, and then you go to the LDS side of it, it doesn't jive with the LDS side. So I got to a place, I actually had left the church for quite a few years because of several reasons. And during this time, I did a lot of study for myself. What do I actually believe, you know, about all of this stuff? And for me, I decided that the emotion code and the theta healing stuff was taking me away from a peace.
Okay.
That I couldn't get thinking that way.
Okay.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And but at the same time, the scary religious side for me too was, and this wasn't any great spiritual experience. I have a child in Indiana. Reed has one moving to Miami. And so we decided to buy land in the heartland by trees, because I love trees, which is Missouri. So we had just bought our land, and somebody on one of the groups said, Laurie Vallo was in Missouri. It's when the Missouri information broke. And I was like, oh, hell no. Are you kidding me?
And Mark Means is there now. We're all going. Everyone's going to Missouri.
I know. I'm gonna go knock on his door and ask him if he has his food storage. But, you know, I was just like, I said to Reed, this just makes me sick. I'm just sick. This is horrible.
Knock on Margaret's door and get the scoop and let us know. That's what you
Yeah, yeah, right.
Oh my gosh.
So, you know, so it's very interesting to me watching this, because I see, like, listening to Anna. I loved listening to Anna. I loved listening to Girl on Fire, because I see it's a very slippery slope. And it fills in blanks that maybe people don't have questions for, you know, it's like, well, you know, or like in Julie's case, I reading a lot of, she was rejected a lot as a child, a lot of moving, a lot of, she says a lot, I was bizarre, I was strange, you know, she talks about her first near-death experience, I think she was, 5 or 6 years old when she had her tonsils out, you know,
okay.
And yeah. And, she talks about when her husband, she first told her husband about her near death experience when she was in her maybe early 30s, I think. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, I've lost my wife. This woman's gone away. You know, I posted one of the pages on that.
Right.
You know, and
the true crime underground Laurie Daybell cult mom Facebook group. I did see this post. It was interesting.
Yeah. And she was devastated that he didn't believe her. And, you know, over the last couple of years, it seems like every time she catches wind that somebody didn't believe her or is making fun of one of her sessions or whatever, she'll come out and she'll actually say, she'll defend herself like crazy. You can tell that's a real button for her, not being believed and trying to prove that she's not a liar.
Right. And not being rejected. I want to point out one story that I do remember from her book when I read it months ago. That there was, when she was a young child, she had in elementary school, so we're talking, I think, elementary school crush she had. She liked a boy. It might have been like 5th or 6th grade. So, you know, is that the time where you start liking boys, and she thought that she was his one and only. And then they went to a roller skating rink and he was holding hands with another girl, and it really affected her. I mean, so much so, clearly it did. She's writing about it in her, you know, autobiography.
Yeah.
But then she said at that point she knew she would never settle for like a guy who like had his eyes on another woman or something, but it was this really profound moment. So I just want to say, I agree with you about the stories of rejection now.
Yeah. Yeah. And control too, you know, and I was also, and I don't mind saying this because I feel like it's an open conversation people can have. I was also sexually abused as a child. And so I, in my own therapy, I've learned a lot about control. You know, how important it is for a sex abuse victim to have control.
Okay.
And and I, her story, she, it sounds like I say, she intimates that these things happened to her when she's a kid. She's always very taken up with sexual crime and that kind of thing. But then as an adult, she's raped. Okay, before she gets married, she's dating a guy and she's raped. And she writes about this in this book. Yeah, devastating, right? And I think that when you don't deal with things properly, that control of men becomes survival, right?
Yes.
And retribution and way to deal with resentment and all that stuff. So when I listen to like Girl on Fire and Anna and the husband thing, oh yeah, I can see how that would happen, you know?
Right. That's a very interesting insight you have there into her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. But, and I know that, you know, this is, kind of away from the neighbor thing, the Chad and, Eldon neighbor, stuff.
Eldon Clausen, again, a neighbor who helped Chad with insurance, life insurance, and died from a lung clot.
Right. Yeah.
Pulmonary embolism. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
You know, and I'm just like, when I first, so I'm going to talk about that a little bit. Eldon, when we, the first day we went out and looked at the land, okay, this is the doctor.
You lose weight, it comes back. You lose it again, it comes back again. And if this cycle sounds familiar, you're not alone and there is a better way. What if you could take a weekly shot to lose weight and keep it off? That's where Ro comes in. Ro provides access to the most popular weight loss shots on the market. The Ro Body Program pairs a weekly shot with lifestyle changes so you can lose weight and keep it off. Ro handles it all, even insurance paperwork. If eligible, you have access to a provider on demand. You can sign up online from home, no doctor's visits. Average weight loss, get this, 15 to 20% in a year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria do apply. Go to ro.co/hidden. Sign up today and you will pay just $99 for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's Ro, ro.co/hidden. A quick word from our sponsor. Mother's Day is just around the corner, and I want to tell you about a very special book. It's called MyLifeInABook.com. It's a service that also turns your mom's life stories into a book. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send your mom a question via email. And then your mom types her responses or record her voice, and MyLifeInABook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, her adventures, her strength and perseverance after losing John's mom just a few months ago. Sharing her stories helps us keep her memory alive. And so we've gifted MyLifeInABook.com to family members. My dad is legally blind and typing can be tedious when you can't see, but my dad can actually record his answers with voice and MyLifeInABook.com transcribes his audio. It's been an enjoyable thing for my dad to tell his stories and his book is almost done. I don't think there is any gift that matters more than preserving our stories. Stories change us and teach us about what we value most. This service now puts our stories into the most beautiful, high-quality book. Check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code HIDDENTRUECRIME at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com and use code HIDDENTRUECRIME for 10% off today.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
We went out to look at the land.
Your husband's a doctor, and you're looking at land where?
In right next door to Eldon. Okay. There were two parcels of land. They're both about 6 acres each.
Okay.
And so we went out to look at this land, and Eldon and his wife came right over with another neighbor. Oh, you know, they tried to talk us out of buying that land. You know, they did not want us buying this land. We liked it. We ended up buying it, but it became a nightmare. They were literally the neighbors from hell. I told you we were self-sufficient, so we'd butcher sheep and pigs and whatever, you know. We had about 3 of those huge chest freezers, and food would be missing, like a lot of food. And then we got talking to like the neighbor across the street. Her name was Tammy also, and we were talking, and she'd been sitting in her living room on a Sunday, and in Eldon walked in the front door. Everybody's at church during those hours, right? And right. She was homesick, and he walked in the door, and she's, you know, what are you doing? And he goes, oh, I can't remember what he came to check. I need a shovel. And she's like, and you came in the house, you know? So anyway, then neighbors started talking and putting the stories together. And I believe Patsy follows True Crime Underground also. Patsy Calloway, she owns the land across the street from Eldon as well, so we were friends. And he was also taking from their freezer, and the neighbors talking, many people were losing food and things. So they actually ended up giving him a calling in church on a Sunday that would keep him at church because he would help himself. But he did other creepy things too. Like, I'd be out milking a cow, and I'd get a feeling like somebody is watching me. And I turn around, he'd be 3 feet away, just standing right there. Or another time, we lived in a one-room cabin. We were waiting to build a house, and I'd left the door open, and he had stepped in the door. He was in the doorway. I had my back to the door. So we had a lot of problems with Eldon. So one of the reasons we gave up the property, the one piece was bank-owned. The other piece we're buying directly from the owner of the property, because they were in a dispute with Eldon over the north fence on the property. And he had gone and moved it 40 feet, which was not a good thing for me. When the cops came out, they were Fremont County cops. I called them terrorists. This is like some maybe war trauma. No, but you know, I mean, it was a very, very triggering, upsetting thing for me. And we could not resolve the fence thing with them. So what we did is we went to the owners and said, we're walking away. And at that point, I think we paid them about 5 years worth of money for that property. So we lost a lot of money, you know.
Yeah.
And moved back to Island Park and opened up a restaurant. And then after a couple of years, moved back down. Yeah, it's beautiful. There where Chad and Tammy were. I'll tell you one interesting thing. Tammy had runner ducks, and I had runner ducks. I had 30 of them. And we had a canal that ran past our place, and then it turned into a creek and went past her place, you know, like an offshoot. So the ducks would swim back and forth, my ducks and her ducks, these runner ducks on the canal. And I loved that about her, that she loved the runner ducks also, because they're just different.
You always had that, you know, connection. I know you weren't like the closest of friends, but did that kind of warm both of your hearts a bit as neighbors?
Yeah, it did. And, you know, and she, when I would run into her, like at the school, because, you know, we had all these kids going to the same schools, right?
And that they were always friends, right?
Yeah, yeah. Just kind, good lady, you know. I didn't even know Chad was a writer. You know, I didn't know that about him at all, but I wasn't like, that's when I was not active in the church anymore.
Okay.
And yeah. And so I think I missed out on a lot of that stuff, and I'm grateful that I did, because I can see how easily you could get swept in. And I will give you another tidbit. I have a son who is an officer, a deputy in a different town nearby.
Okay.
When all this stuff started falling apart in like March, when they arrested Lori in
Hawaii.
He said to me,
March 2020. Mm-hmm.
Right. And then into, I think it was that fall. It could have been that spring. I'm trying to remember when he told me. He was a school resource officer. He says people upped and were leaving, like overnight, people were leaving. And he said that he would get a call and say, you know, this child hasn't been in class for a few days. And then he'd go and have a look and they would have just up and left their house, you know. And so, yeah. And so he said to me, he goes, Mom, he says, this involves so many people, possibly thousands of people. He says, and we wonder if there's more bodies than what these ones that they're focusing on.
Where were people going? Why were they leaving?
I think that they were spooked that Chad and Lori, because they were Chad and Lori followers and part of the whole Eric Smith thing and the whole Julie Rowe thing. The Christopher Parrott is actually in this town where my son lives and works, you know. And I think that is it Christopher Parrott who's there, honey, or James and Nancy? Rigby. They live, it's in the Rigby area. Anyway, it was either Christopher Parrott or James and Nancy, yeah. And these people were, he says it was like cockroaches, shining a light on cockroaches. People were scattering, leaving, because so many people had moved up there to be around Chad.
Whoa.
Yeah, whoa. You know, and
we know that Melanie Gibb and everyone was looking at land there in Rexburg.
Right.
You know, David Warwick. Right.
Right.
Mike and Nancy James had moved up there.
And I'd heard through the telephone wire that people had talked about tent cities and Rexburg being the only place standing. And this is actually one of the reasons I moved away too, is I felt like there was this, we're kind of better than a lot of places. Like there's more wickedness in Salt Lake, for instance. So there's, you know, these are like the diehard true blues up here that are trying to do the right thing, you know. And I'm not saying all Mormons up there either, you know. But there was just a lot of, I think one of the things that bothered me is a lot of people made adjustments for people, which is very Rexburg.
Okay.
You know, yeah.
What do you mean by adjustments?
Okay, I'll give you an example. There's a doctor in town who's friends with my ex-husband who beat his wife. He almost killed her. Her name was Becky Larson. You can read the news story. I think he spent 2 months in jail. He's an orthopod up there. And Mike Larson, he almost killed his wife. I was friends with him and Becky. When I saw Becky, I didn't know how she was still alive. He had beat her so badly. He got away with it. He still practices medicine. Okay.
What?
Yeah. My husband, he went crazy in surgery one day and he threatened, I had found out some horrible things and we'd been married a week and I wanted to call it quits. I was like, I can't do this. The things that he's been accused of are horrible. So before work that morning, we talked about him, about, I don't think I can do this. And he went into work to do surgery as an anesthesiologist. And he wrote a note, a suicide note, and put it in the drawer. A nurse found it and they wanted to get him medical help. So he threatened to shoot them. He didn't have a gun with him. He threatened to shoot them in the OR. Whoa. So they put the hospital on lockdown. Okay.
This has got to bring back the war trauma too. My goodness.
Oh, yeah. And so by the end of the day, I was visiting a behavioral health hospital trying to figure out what the heck was going on, you know. And that was like shoved under the rug, you know. I had a daughter
and just kept practicing after that, even though he threatened to shoot colleagues.
Right. Yep. They didn't want him doing anesthesia at the hospital anymore, but he carried on practicing medicine. Okay. So he opened up a private practice. My daughter, she was 14 was sexually abused by the school counselor. We just actually finished, it took 6 years of, the police department lost her videoed interview twice in Rexburg. Yeah. So that's what I say, Rexburg. To me, I look at this and I'm like, interesting that the light is being shone on Rexburg for this Laurie and Chad thing, where garbage has gone on there for so many years, you know?
In other words, Chad and Laurie are just the surface.
Yep. You know, it doesn't surprise me that people say, how could this happen? In Rexburg, easy. You know, in Rexburg, I can see how easily this could happen. You know, as far as I have a very, very, very dear friend whose son was divorced. The mother committed suicide. Her oldest son had sexually abused the youngest daughter from when she was 5 years old for years. So he went to jail for a couple of years. Instead of giving the father, who had a straight record, good man, the son, because the family knew the judge and blah, 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 the 14-year-old son was given to his older brother who had sexually abused the 5-year-old. It's just up there. I feel like law, it's kind of like watching the Murtaugh thing where everybody knows everybody and so they get away with stuff. The church will hide stuff. This counselor who sexually abused my daughter all through school, he was excommunicated from the church for a year, didn't ever serve jail time, didn't, you know, now there's been a financial settlement.
Did he remain a school counselor, or is he done?
No, they decided he wasn't going to be a school counselor anymore, so he went to a college in Idaho Falls and taught there. The community came up against my family and said, well, you know what? She was 15, 16, 17, 18 years old. This was consensual, and we're calling it an affair. And still, she lives in Rexburg, you know. And that is kind of the mindset, you know. And it is just shocking to me. It blows me away what gets shoved under the rug up there, because it's just corrupt. You know, and so I'm not surprised.
This idea that it's this pure, clean town where no crime ever happens, that's not. No.
I'm sure it's less than Chicago, but you know what I mean? I'm sure it's less than some places, but I think that a lot of things are just shoved under the rug, you know?
I know what you mean, though, right. I lived in a similar sort of town with the same feel. It wasn't there. And I do know what you mean when you say you were kind of trying to say like everyone knows everyone and they don't abide by the law.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I remember actually a sheriff saying to me once, we do what we do here. Like, this is our, like, stop, you know? Cause I was like, well, that's not the way the state, you know, I was questioning, like, well, the state says A, B, C, D. It was actually, it was specifically about assessing sex offenders, and their response was, we do things our way here, you know? And I was saying, well, the state laws are this, and well, we do things our way here. So kind of like that, would you say, would that be a similar?
Yeah, I would. I would say it depends on how it's going to affect the church.
And when you say the church in Rexburg or the church as a whole?
The church in Rexburg, because I feel like there were a lot of people who knew exactly what was going on. Stake presidents, wives, stake presidency, you know, people who, you know, the counselors, you know, normally there's like this hierarchy of leaders, right? There is no way people didn't know that a lot of this stuff was going on, especially with Julie Rowe was pretty public. Her and Eric Smith were pretty darn public on YouTube and everything about what they believed.
Yeah, okay. There were so many people. I think actually sometimes I just don't get interviews with people because, as you point out, like the shame, the secrecy, not wanting to be involved, people
the embarrassment.
The embarrassment, and Girl on Fire talked a lot about that. She said she was speaking so that because she hoped other people would come forward rather than hide from this truth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. You know, and there's people that I do wish that would come forward, you know, that have their own stories. But I was told that Eric Smith had actually gone to a woman at a get together at somebody's house and said, you know, you're supposed to be my wife, you know, and her husband was like, what, you know, and she's like, that's it, we're leaving, you know, that was it, they cut him off. So there's a lot of these little, I don't know if they're apocryphal, if they're true, if they're, you know, but the person that told me is pretty dang believable, you know, where I think there was so much of this nonsense going on, and they were creating, I think, a situation that they thought things were going to fall apart so quickly that they were going to be the last ones standing with the truth. Kind of like Laurie did, let's go to Hawaii. Things are going to go nutsoid, and then we can just go back and, you know, we're not going to get caught.
Rexburg will just keep protecting us, and it's the promised land, and people trust us there. Yeah, I remember before the children were found how many people defended him online too, you know?
Yeah.
Also, I want to point out, though, something. People will say, I know people, and Chad would never do this. To that point, I want to say, if to anyone that says, oh, I can tell whether a person is good or not, no, you can't. And when you finally admit that, you'll be able to process things and evidence a lot better.
You know, and even this, like all the gag orders or whatever they're calling them, where the documents are sealed, you know, I get why they're doing that. Fine. I get why they're telling us they're doing that. But then there's this part of me that goes, yep, that sounds like Fremont County and Rexburg, because you know what? They've got to hide stuff. They've got to hide as much as they can. Right. You know, and I think that that kind of thing perpetuates the garbage. You know, my daughter, for instance, when she couldn't get anybody to listen to her about the sexual abuse, you know, she came up with these cards that she has a Instagram, and they are affirmation cards for sexual abuse survivors. And she became as loud as she could, you know, and it made other people come out of the woodwork and talk about their trauma. And I think it's the same thing, is if they would normalize, like you do, talking about this, and people could see, you know what, we can talk about this. Somebody else's opinion of Rexburg is going to be totally different than mine, I'll guarantee it.
Right.
You know, but if then more people would feel like, okay, maybe I can speak about this and my situation with this. And like I sent you that book that my ex-husband wrote, you know. And
a near-death experience book written by your ex-husband.
Yeah. So we were scuba diving, and he had a near-death experience. And when he had read all the Julie Rowe stuff. There was another woman, Embraced by the Light. Oh gosh, what was her name?
Is that Sarah?
Anyway, No.
Menet. I know Sarah Menet.
Oh. Anyway, the book is Edie. Her last name's Edie. E-D-I-E, okay. I think. Anyway, she'd written a couple of books. It seems like one book's successful, and then they remember more, and then write another one. Then they remember, you know, like this kind of a thing, the Julie Rose style, you know. Mm-hmm. And he read all these, and then he wrote his book. And so I'm suspicious of near-death experience books, okay? I don't disbelieve that some people have these experiences, but I do believe that if God's going to speak to you, that it's for you. It's not for you to tell everybody else, right? It's a private thing because so many things are open to interpretation. I look at a war a totally different way than the average American does because of what I went through as a kid, right? So I can't expect Americans to have the same, oh my gosh, I'm going to store food and I'm going to dig a pit and I'm going to hide it in there because if somebody comes and puts this on my property, I want to know that I can, you know, I mean, like bizarre
right.
stuff.
You can't
I have a bizarre.
Them to understand no. the reason you do things, and everyone right. has different experiences in life. Right.
Right. And so he wrote this book and I read probably the first half of it and I was just like, how can you have met Jesus and then done the, he was very physically abusive. Okay. And then do the things that you do if you've been in the presence of God. You know, you look at the Chad and Lori thing, it's like, okay, how could you be who you say you are or had these experiences genuinely and then kill two children and whoever knows how, we don't even know who else was, you know, the Brandon and Alex and Lori's Joe Ryan, because I think she killed him, you know, all this stuff. How do you justify the whole Nephi thing? Just absolute nonsense. I don't believe that that's justification. Do you know what I mean?
Nephi Laban's story, that infamous, the infamous quote Zulema wrote in a text to her friend, Julie, not Julie Rowe. I know who the other Julie is. That it was a Nephi and Laban ending. It's a really damning text because if you understand the story in the Book of Mormon, Nephi kills Laban, beheads him because he has some records, some scriptures that his people need, and the famous scripture, it's better for one man to perish than a nation dwindle in unbelief. So that is that right. story. So when she says it was a Nephi and Laban ending, it's very clear that that ending ends with Nephi beheading Laban. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and as far as that too, I feel like these groups, like, okay, Theta Healing and all that again, okay, they talk about the earth, the wind, fire and water. Okay, those are elements that pagans and witches, and I identify more as a witch than a Mormon, just so you know. That's a whole nother conversation, not in a dark way. It's the herbalist side of me, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But I feel like they, I just lost my train of thought. Oh, the earth, wind, and fire and stuff. They take all this stuff, and I don't know if they're Googling things, Or somebody comes in and goes, you know what, I think we can make it stronger because we add this and this and this in. Or we add, you know, the the weather thing in, or the earthquakes. Or it just seemed, it was so insulting for me to read that and have this connection with earth like I do.
Yeah. Yeah.
And read that and go, oh my gosh, you over-dyed, bleached, Botox, crazy person pretending that you know that you're doing something sacred.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. To me, that, and I know this is, makes me sound like a nutball too, you know, but that, I mean, that's, I have little granddaughters who love to go and pick herbs with me and make creams and
Beautiful.
Potions and things, you know, yeah. And to me, all that stuff is sacred, more sacred than a lot of things. But you're taking these things and saying, oh yeah, I read this article on Google and now I'm gonna, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm in charge of why, you know, we, I mean,
and now we
Laurie
can control
took
the and now we can control the elements.
Yeah. Right. And the narrative, you know, okay, well, you know, that went down because we did the right thing. We combined the right elements and now Charles is dead. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my gosh. No, Charles is dead because you're a wicked, evil, horrible person. You know, the children are dead for no reason than, and I do think, by the way, that the way the kids died, and I caught a lot of flack about this once, the way that they killed the kids, I think has to do with this whole elements thing.
Okay.
And also, because JJ, in the LDS church, if a child has developmental problems, mm-hmm. They used to say that, okay, well, you know, if you have a child with Down syndrome, for instance, well, it's he was given that because he was so elect on the other side,
yes,
that he's given this thing in this life to protect him.
Yeah.
Did you ever hear that?
Or, I heard that they were elect in the past life.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Not necessarily the second part of that, but it makes sense to me.
Yeah. So when I look at JJ's death, I think, okay, they would have seen him as an elect person now who became a zombie. I don't know how they fit that in. So they couldn't destroy his body the way they did Tylee's.
Oh.
That's a theory of mine.
Okay, interesting. Right? Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah. And when you listen to the way Melanie and them talked about Tylee, you know, she was annoyed by JJ, but I don't think she was as disgusted by him as she was Tylee, you know. But
yeah,
you got a lot of editing, huh? How much
the opposite, Bernadine.
Oh, sweet.
Everything you're saying is fascinating. Thank you for sharing your thoughts. This has been actually really enlightening for me too.
And here's the fence where Eldon would have walked. And here's the ditch.
Let's go back to Eldon Clausen for a second. Mm-hmm. Did he and or his family, and I want to state this, as far as Eldon's family goes, Eldon's family is adamant that he died naturally, mm-hmm. that he wasn't involved in anything with Chad, and some even say that it was maybe investigated his death. It was right around the time, though. It was when did he pass away, Eldon?
You know, it wasn't it like September.
It was after JJ died, wasn't it?
Right. Yep. And the thing with Eldon is he was he believed he was the water master. So on our land, we decided we were going to dig a pond. Oh my goodness, he about came unglued that we were stealing water. Now it was groundwater coming up from the water table or whatever. You know, the water table was high there because we were right on the river. Mm-hmm. Or if somebody in the neighborhood took water too early on the ditch, or it was constant with Eldon. He was horrible with the water. And along Chad's fence, right where JJ was buried.
Ditch.
There was a ditch along that fence. And actually, Patsy and I talked about it quite a bit. Right by the fence, Eldon would have walked that ditch, and he noticed everything.
They probably thought, we have nothing to hide. If we do it out in broad daylight, nobody will even know. But they weren't counting on Eldon.
Once I had all these little chicks in my yard, and I got a call from him that some of my chicks were dead. He had come over and there was a box and the heat lamp had fallen and killed a couple of the chicks in the box. He knew everything that was going on everywhere. It wasn't even on his property and he knew what was going on, you know. He was a snooper. He was somebody who got into everybody's everything. There is no way he didn't know that Eldon or that Chad or Alex dug a hole there by the pond, because it's a little pond, and buried something there. Eldon would have known it.
So if someone chose to murder Eldon, there's a motive.
Oh, I think so. Absolutely.
We're here, just barely west of Chad's. And there's where they found the kids. And here's the fence where Eldon would have walked. And here's the ditch. with the water in it. It's not, hasn't all come in yet for from the winter. And this is where the original memorial fence was right down here. And then when it was so crudely taken down in the middle of the night, prices let us move it over here. And my niece came up with this cute, clever idea to come up with a rainbow in Tylee and JJ colors. And we freshened it up with flowers. Okay, and then we'll come over here. And here's the ditch, a culvert. And Eldon would have walked, he could have walked right here on the road, or even at times right next to that fence, right here. Right here, right here, right here where they buried the kids, out in the open, out in the open.
And he was a fit person. He walked a lot. He had cattle. He was always walking. He was in good shape. His wife was a herbalist. We had several conversations about herbs, you know. So they were very, you know, into natural stuff, you know.
And didn't he pass away outside, too?
You know, I think she did find him outside.
And it was a pulmonary embolism, which does happen. You know, blood clots do happen. And it is a way that people die suddenly. I do want to confirm that.
And with Alex and possibly with, you know, it's
I know it. It is interesting, right? It definitely raises suspicions. I know that Chad asked one neighbor after Lori was arrested to consider mortgaging their house to help Chad get Lori out, and they did not. But that, I, to me, implies that they might have, he might have asked plenty of neighbors this. And as you point out, just about the Rexburg culture and the secrecy, and that was fascinating what your son said about thousands of people really being involved in this and people not speaking up because of shame. Would the Clausens perhaps be believers of Chad's, you know, fringe beliefs?
Oh yeah, I know neighbors. Yeah, for sure they did. And I know other neighbors on that street who did. Like, were defending Chad up until the children were found, were defending Chad, and then were confronted at that point and didn't say anything. They just, you don't know. I don't want to, my husband says, you can give a name. I'm like, I don't want to do that. That's their story, you know? But I, yeah, but off the record, I'll tell you something else. That okay. Why I, yeah. But he was very, very supported by a lot of people, a lot of neighbors.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess I'm just trying to figure out if perhaps the Clausens, you know, they don't want it to be investigated, and they're so adamant, they've been angry about people like us who speculate. Could there be a reason they don't want people talking? Could they have been helping Chad unknowingly? I am not putting anything else on them. I do not think they murdered anyone. I don't think they committed a crime. I'm just trying to understand.
Yeah.
Do you think, also, the insurance. Didn't Eldon sell Chad Tammy's insurance policy?
I've heard that, but I don't know about that for sure. You know, but I've also heard that part of Eldon's land was consideration for the tent city.
Oh, Eldon's land was.
Yeah, I've heard that as well. And I don't know for sure. I don't know for sure, but I was told that part of his land was under consideration for.
What about Sean Little Bear's sweat lodge? That was another thing that was supposedly there. Did you know about that?
Yeah, or? I don't know. I didn't know about that. I didn't ever see anything like that there. I used to go to a sweat lodge in Arco, but not.
Not Sean Little Bear's.
I would have gone way closer if I'd known about that one, you know, because it's a cool experience.
Eldon's land was considered a place for Tent City.
That's what I was told. Yeah. So we'd have to, you know, find out for sure. But I was told that it was part of the tent city.
Okay. Referring back to the secrecy and culture in Rexburg, you've brought a lot of insight with your opinions. Mm-hmm. As you say, other people will have different experiences and different opinions of Rexburg, but I really value mm-hmm. what you saw, especially as an outsider who moved there and has lived many places. I really mm-hmm. value your opinion. I do know, with that being said, I do want to share that while so many neighbors were defending Chad, there was one woman who was being very vocal and telling people this will not end well. It was Heather Daybell. That is Matt mm-hmm. Daybell's wife.
Right.
And they were in the same church congregation or ward as Chad. And right. she told the bishop very clearly, this will not end well.
Right.
This is not okay. And the bishop believed Chad.
Right.
I also think that goes to the whole protecting everyone at all costs and leaning yep. towards men a little bit, as you say, you know,
right.
It seems as if men were believed more than women.
Yeah.
That's my opinion. That's my opinion.
No, I absolutely agree with you. In fact, I was in that ward. Okay. When Eldon was tearing down the north fence, it was on Memorial Day weekend, a member of the bishopric, who was a Chad follower, I found out later, was helping Eldon tear down the fence.
Whoa.
And that was part of my whole, because it just blew up. You know, I'm like, what do you think you're doing, right? So it's very, I agree with you. I think it's very, very patriarchal up there. I think that it's that way a lot in the church. It's a very patriarchal thing, which is, I think, one of the reasons that the Julie Rowe thing, again, is very interesting, and the Lori Vallo thing, is you have this goddess figure. And I think they were almost vying, actually, for position a little bit mm-hmm. to lead this new bunch, right? And only one person could win, so of course they're
many people believed in this. So when Lori was the lead, it was real to many people.
Oh yeah, yeah. You know, and for a lot of women, I can see why they'd be attracted to that, because finally it's not the men in charge all the time, it's not the men deciding everything all the time, because there's a lot of those groups that were coming up that where the woman wanted the priesthood, mm-hmm. you know, and I'd heard quite a bit about that in Rexburg before I had moved away, was these little, and that to me, I don't get, because it's not about wanting the priesthood for me. It's like, why do you feel like that's something you need to have, to be able to be constructive in your life?
In the LDS faith, to explain what you're saying, boys are given the Aaronic priesthood at 12, and then they get the Melchizedek right. priesthood. It's not something women receive. They did in the early days.
But our consolation,
yeah,
right. But our consolation prize is we can have children, right?
Right.
That's right.
Their
consolation is that they get the priesthood, which you can go one way
right.
or the other.
So they get the priesthood and we get to go into labor. Wonderful.
That's right.
Yeah. You are a champion, by the way, I want to say, because having 9 children, did you say?
Yes.
Bless your soul.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? I tell my kids all the time, you don't have to do this. They're like, Mom, I can only have 2. I'm like, good.
Yeah. But no, you bring up an interesting point, though. Chad did tell Lori she was a goddess, and she would lead the 144, and that she has the priesthood, has or will be given, has. And she gave blessings. So I think has. But I do want to say this, though, because Chad was absolutely a misogynist. I don't mm-hmm. think that was about empowering women. I think that was actually choosing a woman based on her looks. Oh, she's hot to me. She's got dyed blonde hair, and she's petite and she's fit. And so thus, she is a goddess. You know, wasn't based on anything about her being noble or, you know, being like Joan of Arc or anything. It was about your sexual appeal.
And a long-awaited makeout session took place in that lobby. This was manifest in the mortal world to James and Elena through the scientific phenomenon known as loin fire.
Loin fire.
I'm not sure what science they're referring to there, but maybe like biblical science?
Pretty basic, I think.
I wouldn't call him madly in love. I'd call him madly in lust. Yeah.
Right. You know, and Reed and I, we have hours to talk in the truck. And some of our conversations, I think, oh my gosh, we should have a YouTube because I think we'd have people rolling on the ground.
Oh my gosh, do it.
Okay, you know what? No. Yeah, I'll send them to you. So, you know, you think about, okay, the way a Mormon boy is raised. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you may not masturbate. You may not look at porn. You know, you're good boy, good boy. You get to go on a mission. You know, we want to keep you this way so you can go on a mission. You're going to be good and clean and nice and be a virgin when you get married, both of you preferably. Mm-hmm. All right. So there's going to be very limited sexual experience. And then you hit midlife crisis and you have some men that go, and women, I'm sure, who go, you know, what else is out there? Okay. And so this hot blonde, although, I mean, I understand that some people think that Lori is hot, you know.
He was loaded and hot.
Well, his
loaded.
Love story.
So,
yeah.
His word, a hot blonde. Yep.
Right, you know, and it's like, and they'll listen to you and they'll believe the stuff that your wife might, I don't know what Tammy thought about his stuff, but from what I've heard on your show and stuff, maybe she wasn't as enamored with Chad as Lori was enamored with his stuff, right? In that case, being a Chad, you're like, oh yeah, yeah, you're going to have sex this way? You bet. Oh, this is different. This is, I've got this great body. The whole, where she was saying, you know, you have to have sex 3 times a day, she said somewhere to something, you know. It's like, oh my goodness, is this like fueling a man's dream midlife crisis or what? You
right,
know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it was a fantasy, like the cheerleader, you know, the most perfect body. That's the way, what he said in those texts to her. Their love story was very much about lust, you know?
Right, yeah.
That famous text novel that he wrote her. It wasn't about who she was on the inside. It was about lust. He mentioned her intelligence once, but it was very lustful. Right.
Yeah.
You are a goddess because you are hot and your body is the perfect dimensions. You said that Rexburg is secret and things get swept under the rug and people cover for people. Mm-hmm. I have been consistently and constantly fascinated with the fact that they did not perform an autopsy on a 49-year-old woman and just quickly called it natural. And especially because there were concerns going on in Arizona at that time. Much had already happened. The children were missing. There was word of cult activity. It wasn't like this was the first thing. And someone quickly decided, natural, let's go. I just want your opinions on that. Do you think that this was just genuinely, okay? Or do you think someone was covering for someone? I mean, what was that?
So Ms. Dye showed up, and the family said they don't want an autopsy. Therefore, the coroner just signed off then and there. And then the funeral home took Ms. Dye, though? Is that how that works?
Yes, that's pretty much how it works. So unless, and then they went to the funeral home, and I'm not aware if Brenda went to the funeral home with. I don't believe so. I can look in the activity and see when they, you know, when she cleared versus, because I know that my deputy went to the funeral home. So I'm not exactly sure, but I can look at the.
Well, I know, and you said earlier there was an incident report, but was there a physical police report to it?
Usually I can look at, I don't think that there was a police report done.
You know what? I know Brenda Dye from Island Park. Okay. I had restaurants in Island Park, and I know other people that have gone through the program and become my college professor was actually the coroner in Rexburg. So when Brenda became the coroner for Fremont County, I was surprised, because other than being an EMT, I thought a coroner did a whole lot more than that, right? Mm-hmm. And so when I look at the way that, you know, people are crying at a funeral, it's a, you know, not at a funeral, at a next to the bed with the dead body, and Chad saying this and that, I can see them just saying, oh yeah, she just died of natural causes, and sweeping, it's just a convenient thing. Somebody who isn't a trained coroner, like some of the people that I've listened to, I don't know if they're on your show or somebody else's, the things that they normally do as a coroner, there was not that level of training for the Fremont okay. County coroner.
No. So you don't think it was anything nefarious? It was just sort
no.
of...
No. Yeah, I think that... I don't know how much... in Island Park, the culture up there was not the same as the Rexburg culture. The food storage thing, you know, it's a very different place, Island Park, than down in the valley, down the, and so I don't think it was Brenda hiding things because of what Chad and Lori had been up to. I think it was just dumb,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Okay. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah. Because her husband was actually our bishop up there. They're a good wow. family. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for sharing that information and knowledge about her. The children, Tammy's children. I'm going to call them Tammy's children.
Yeah.
What were they like? Did you enjoy them? They're clearly in your children's lives a lot. And
yeah, like I said, Mark was the one that I had more interaction with than the others. The others were kind of, you know, I'd go stop in at an event and chat with Leah for a minute because she was standing next to my son, you know, or okay. I didn't. Yeah. But and so it was more the things that what my kids would say. But Mark, what a sweet, gentle kid, you know. And he was on his mission, you know, when his mom died. And Gabriel, my youngest, the one who's on a mission right now, you know, he was in contact with Mark. I'd reached out to Mark and I hadn't heard anything back. And I thought, well, you know, when you're on a mission, there's only certain people that you can communicate with. But he was communicating with Gabriel. And it was hard and he was confused. He decided to stay out when he came back. I know that the last I talked to Gabriel, and I know he's moved on. He actually went to Alaska for a while just to try and get away from everything that was going on, you know?
Mark
and
did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you yeah. for sharing that.
And I listened to the kids' interview and I'm like, it's annoying, but I can see what else are they supposed to do until it's proved to them that their dad isn't that way. I can see why they would choose what they did, you know?
Right.
I think Emma and Garth drank more of the Kool-Aid than the others, frankly, but yeah.
Okay. I have talked to one person who used to work with Mark, and I do want to share that that person said he was an incredibly hard worker.
Yeah.
So that was
I'm not
their,
surprised.
Yeah, that was what they
yeah
saw in him. So he must have yeah. also gotten that from Tammy, because she was an incredibly hard worker.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you for sharing that, and how happy I am to hear that he's doing well and that he was able to get away. And thank you. I've always felt really bad for him. As you said, he was on his mission and then he had to come home early from his mission because of COVID. I hope all of these children will be able to heal.
Eldon would have walked. He could have walked right here on the road, or even at times right next to that fence, right here. Right here, right here, right here where they buried the kids, out in the open, in broad daylight. They probably thought, we have nothing to hide. If we do it out in broad daylight, nobody will even know. But they weren't counting on Eldon.
I contacted Eldon Claussen's family before publishing this interview. I am told that information about Eldon stated in this interview by the former neighbor is false. Shirley Clausen requested I reach out to the Fremont County Sheriff's Office, as they are aware of everything involved in Eldon's death and would be the best source of accurate information. Shirley tells me that Fremont County has told her they see no connection between Eldon's death and Chad Daybell. And I do have on good authority that law enforcement sees no connection between the Chad Daybell case and the sudden death of Eldon. When I reached out to the Fremont County Sheriff's Office, they told me at this time they are not making a statement. Lauren Mathias, Hidden True Crime. Hello, Hidden Gems. It's Lauren with Hidden, a true crime podcast. As a TV reporter, I learned the art of visual storytelling. So if you're like me, you enjoy listening, but also viewing. You can actually head to our YouTube channel, Hidden True Crime, to watch these interviews. Hit the subscribe button for surprise lives and breaking news. And for exclusive content, things Dr. John and I only dare say behind a paywall, become a Patreon member at patreon.com/hiddentruecrime. You'll find bonus episodes, early releases, and insider info. Thank you for your endless support.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.